Welcome back to the Autoblog Podcast. I'm Greg Migliori. We have a great show for you today. Lots to talk about. We're talking about the Hyundai Palisade. Senior editor for All Things Green, John Snyder, has driven it. We've also spent some time on our long-termers, the 330e. It's the plug-in hybrid BMW. Our EV6 long-termer as well. I think John just charged that. So with that, welcome. What's going on, man?
Not a whole lot. Just enjoying the winter weather that has finally arrived. I got in a little bit of skiing over the weekend, nice. Which is great. And yeah, just getting ready for the holidays. How about you?
Same. Didn't get in the skiing, but I was actually thinking of trying to get like a cheap pair of skis and get into it. I think I kind of need like a, you know, like an expensive holiday, if you were an expensive hobby to spend money on in between golf season. So yeah. I don't know. It seems like that could be a way to do it.
Well, yeah, each trip is an adventure, even at the smaller hills around here in Michigan. It's always fun.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Maybe we'll get on eBay or play it against sports and see what's out there, and we'll see. Who knows? Big show. We'll talk a little bit too in the news section about the Mustang Dark Horse and the rest of the horsepower we're seeing for the lineup. Lightning Pro prices up again. This is the second or third time. And also Celestiq Demand. Cadillac is red hot. It's going to take you a while to get one, if you can get one. They're $300,000. We will spend your money. And it's somebody who's looking to replace the 2011 Taurus Show. I think that's kind of cool. That's a fun one to at least kind of riff on and riff off of. So tell me about the Palisade. You did a road test for it. I spent a lot of time in our former long-term Hyundai Palisade, as did you. You're a Palisade owner. This is the new one. What's it like?
It's quite familiar, but there are a lot of little things that sort of, a lot of them are sort of tech upgrades that I think are really nice. I kind of wish were on my 2021. I had two Palisades in the driveway, ours, which is my wife's daily driver, and then the 2023 model. So it was sort of back and forth between them, sort of comparing things. I noticed, of course, they look different. I'm not sure which I think I like the old looks better. That grill, the sort of waterfall grill thing on the new one, it actually photographs really well. Takes up a lot of real estate when you see it in person. It's just very commanding. And you got to really like a lot of grill. One thing that has always bugged me about the 2021 model is there's little buttons that you have to press to unlock the door. I would always, being used to most of the cars we get, you walk up and you can just pull on the door handle or touch it and it'll unlock. But the 2021, you have to find this button and press it. It's not too hard, but it's only on the front doors. The new Palisade has, it's touch sensitive. So you touch it and it unlocks for you as you're opening it. And then, once again, they only left it on the front door. So you have to go to the front door to unlock it, even if you want to just throw something in the second row. There's a little digital HVAC screen now, below the center stack, which I was a little skeptical of at first because I prefer sort of physical controls, but nice thing about this is you can control the rear HVAC from that little screen. And instead, in the old one, you'd have to sort of go through a menu and do it on the touch screen to change the air in the back. But now you can just do it right from there. You don't have to leave your map or whatever you have on your main screen. Has a digital rear view camera, the rear view mirror camera, which is great and adjustable. You can adjust the aim up and down You can adjust the brightness, which is awesome because we always pack our Palisade full to the brim with dog kennels and luggage and strollers and stuff. So it's often hard to see out the back, and having an actual camera on the mirror was really helpful. And there's some other little things like better cruise control sort of learns, helps you, you know, it's better at adapting to what other cars are doing. So if a car is crowding you or a car is cutting you off, it reacts better. And then the front seats, they have adjustable side bolsters, and it had sort of a massage function, which was cool. I didn't really care that much about the seats. And then finally, the other little thing, well, there's two other little things. This one actually has USB-C ports, which is great. Because so many things are moving away from USB-A, the, you know, regular rectangular, to USB-C. And yeah, there's USB-C ports. And there's still USB, regular USB ports, but there's USB-C all the way in the back, even, in the third row. And there's a heated third row, by the way. The thing I didn't really use much because, you know, I didn't want to create the profile and do all that. And I didn't really remember that it was a feature, but you can use your phone as a key with this one. So that's another really helpful thing. If you want to, you know, lock your keys in your car, if you're going swimming or something, or, if you just run outside to throw something in your car and oops, I left my keys in the drawer, you can just, use your phone to open it. But otherwise it drives the same. Still, you know, not great MPG, but I think all the other things sort of help make up for that. I really like all the different features that Hyundai and Kia and Genesis keep coming out with year after year after year. Just little features that improve quality of life with the vehicles, and none of them are very big on their own, but like being in the 23 felt like a decent upgrade to the 2021 model. I'm not gonna go out and, you know, sell the 21 for 23 because it has, you know, a digital mirror and massaging seats, but I don't know, that it's really nice that they're keeping it sort of fresh and future proof.
Yeah, that sounds like a significant, not insubstantial, upgrade. You know, there's some stuff on there that I think does sort of like make your life better. And it's like, I think if you do like a mid-cycle refresh, right, you know, you're giving people a reason to want to buy the new car versus trying to see what kind of screaming deal they could get on, like, you know, an inventory clear out.
Yeah. This still has the HUD, but the HUD is improved. It shows you, physically where the other cars around you, you know, if it's as a car comes along your side, you can sort of see the position of it in the HUD rather than just telling you that there's a car in your blind spot. Things like little things like that, you know, they're all over the place in this car, and they're just, yeah, little changes that add up to a big feeling of overall quality.
Yeah. I obviously really like the outgoing model, spent a lot of time in it. Totally love the aesthetics of the redesign or the refresh, if you will, but I feel like it's going to grow. I saw one on the road the other day and I thought, okay, it looks more contemporary. It's a little more like early 20s versus late teens, if you will, to get really granular about the design. Like, it looks a little more like kind of blingy, which is sort of the look that like cars are getting, larger grills and more chrome or fake chrome. So, yeah, I get it. You know, you can't really go smaller unless you do something, you know, pretty bizarre.
The one opportunity I think Hyundai missed here was adding, you know, a more rugged trim or a more rugged option package or something. You know, the Telluride got the X Line and X Pro models for the refresh, and I think they're going to make probably a good difference on sales. I mean, a lot of people want that look, even if they're not going to go off-roading. I went off-roading in it, and it was actually surprisingly capable. I've taken the stock Palisade out off-roading to just, you know, like mountain trails and logging trails and things like that up north. And yeah, it's quite capable. But I think just the aesthetic of a more ruggedized version would help sell even more. Not that they need help selling any more of these, but their sales projections keep growing on both these vehicles. To the point where they're adding more capacity. But I think, yeah, I can see maybe why, you know, Hyundai, you know, doesn't want to do everything that Kia does. They want to sort of differentiate themselves. But that was a good move by Kia to make those trims. And it'd be cool if Hyundai did it too.
I agree. I've done some light off-roading with the Palisade up north in the UP. So still not very like treacherous terrain, but you know, getting some dirt and mud and stuff on it, and it's fine. But like you, I've driven those sort of X models on the Kias, and they look good. And it's, you know, they may give you just a little bit of extra, you know. So I think it would have been a good move for Hyundai. So that's the new Palisade. They're out, the 2023 model. Let's talk about the our long-term 330e. We'll talk about a couple of long-termers here. Kind of a good way to start to wrap up the year with some long-term updates here. And you drove this car is probably actually more than I have at this point. I just have been in it for a little over 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks now. And I've been sort of using the podcast as my almost like group therapy, trying to explain. Like, it's such a chameleon of a car.
It is. It's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, what did you think? You drove it more than I have. What do you think? How often did you have to fill up? That's my big question.
All the time. Okay. If I were going, you know, a long distance, you know, the fuel tank is tiny.
It's frustrating.
Unless you're using it mostly around town and plugging it in every night, you're going to be filling it up a lot. But it works well as a hybrid. It's sort of interesting. You know, it's got you've got a automatic transmission that works even in electric mode, so you can feel the shifts when you're just rolling on electric power, which is kind of interesting. I mostly liked it. It was comfortable. It's just sort of hard to wrap your head around. It doesn't really feel like a hybrid when you're driving it all the time, but it is sort of a chameleon of a car. I mean, it's sort of a little bit of this, a little bit of that, just sort of, I mean, that's what hybrid means, I suppose, but it definitely, like, it's hard to pin it down. Like, other hybrids definitely feel, you know you're driving a hybrid and it has its own sort of personality. This sort of, I don't know, borrows a little bit from the gasoline models and a little bit from wherever else. You know, it just sort of injects a little bit of something different with that e-motor.
Yeah, the boost function is fun. You know, when you go into sport and then it's like an over boost kind of thing, that's kind of fun. I think the biggest challenge I found is, especially when it's cold out, you fill it, you know, you top off the electric range, but then it just, that 21 miles just disappears like immediately.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, so now I'm driving around a 4-cylinder BMW with like a 9-gallon tank of that I'm paying premium for, you know? So it's like, that's frustrating. Right. I need to fill it up again. I filled it up basically every week I've had it, and I'm not driving far. It's like probably how a lot of people would drive it, short daily things, and then maybe like one mid-range. By mid-range, I mean like 40 mile or something, like on the weekend, like, you know, you go do like holiday card pictures or something, and it's, you know, out at a Christmas tree farm, so that's like 40 miles away. but not the kind of thing that you're like, oh man, I got to fill up after this. And that's sort of the experience of this car is you got to be really thinking like, okay, geez, I'm coming back down on 100 miles of range again, you know? So I found that frustrating. Yeah. You know, and there's definitely an argument to say, well, hey, should you have like, you know, level 2 charger in your home or something? Well, yeah, maybe. I'm still using the BMW one that came with the car, which is fine. But it takes a while, if you will, to charge. And, you know, that's to be expected. It's a level 1. But, I mean, the counter argument is, should you really spend the money on a level 2 charger in your home if you're only going to get 21 miles? Maybe, maybe not. I feel like you need another car to justify that. And this is like your other one.
Yeah. Speaking of charging, one thing I did like about it, it's a very small thing, but it's something I don't see in a lot of hybrids or EVs. And I was surprised to find it in this plug-in hybrid, is you can, through the menu, you can change the amperage at which you charge. So, so in my garage, I've got a 15 amp breaker for those outlets. And it's a fussy one. It breaks real easy. So a lot of cars that I try and plug in to charge, it trips that breaker and then my porch lights go off and things like that.
That's funny.
The hair dryer stops working in the bathroom upstairs. It's a weird circuit. But anyway, I dialed it down just like a couple of amps to like 13. Further from that, you know, brake territory, and it charged just fine. The other cars I've seen that allow you to change the amperage, you know, they just have, you know, 3 settings. This, you can dial it in over, you know, anything. I forget what the cap was, but you've got this huge range of amperage that you can choose. And, so you don't have that breaker problem. and it's just a really thoughtful thing that I was surprised to see in this sort of mashed together plug-in hybrid.
Yeah. It's the interesting thing, too, is that you do get most of the benefits of a pretty fun-to-drive 3 Series. I mean, no complaints about driving it. It's steers well, brakes well. I think it looks pretty good. Feels like a 3 Series to me. Interior is very nice. I think I said this last week, so I won't belabor it. 10 more miles, man. That's give me 30 miles of range, and I think I could really like this car. And the infrastructure hasn't been a problem. I've topped it off at the mall with level 2 chargers. There's plenty of other chargers around me where I could do that. So it's, you know, it's not like a situation where I'm like frustrated with that part of it.
There's lots of charging opportunities now for level 2, and that's all you can really ask for, you know, when you've got the gasoline motor as backup. You're not worried about range, but it's nice to be able to top it off when you go to the store or something and be on your way under electric power again.
It's a fun car. Yeah, I'm going to be interested to see how my thoughts evolve, you know, over the course of, you know, I've had it for a few weeks now. It's probably about halfway, maybe a little bit over its time, about to go to somebody else, but I'll be interested to see how everybody else's opinions kind of evolve on the car over time. So our other long-termer is all electric, the EV6. I saw in Slack, it looked like you ran out and had some lunch and charged, which is a good move. I just had some McDonald's myself, so.
Yeah, I had Taco Bell. I'm feeling a little under the weather, and somehow fast food always makes me feel better.
Taco Bell is good when you have a sore throat, I think.
It reminds me of being a kid, and I'd have to, you know, stay home from school, or like I'd have to go home sick from school. My mom would stop at McDonald's or something. I think it just takes me back to that feeling of comfort and security.
Agreed, totally.
But anyway, I went out and got Taco Bell and charged it up. And I took it up north last week to our cottage just to get some plumbing done up there. It's interesting. There's more chargers along the way up there than there were even a year ago. There's significantly more. So it made that trip quite easy. Even though it was cold and that was eating into my range, I was able to find pretty fast chargers. I did end up, you know, adding like 40 minutes to an hour to my 4-hour trip. But, you know, I was also, you know, as I was charging, I went and stopped and got something to eat at one point. And like on my way up, I started with very low battery. So I stopped twice. On my way back, I could have stopped once had I had been able to charge the car at the cottage. But as it was, I was, the nearest fast charger to the cottage is like a half hour away. So I, you know, was going on double that amount of battery eaten off already. And so I stopped twice along the route home, and it had an hour. But I could have done it even in the winter. I could have done it on just one charge if I had stopped in West Branch. That would have got me, you know, pretty low on the range. There's still room for improvement along that I-75 corridor for a couple more fast chargers. But yeah, I ended up charging at an Electrify America charger, a 350 kilowatt charger, and I didn't see my peak charging rate get above 130, which was kind of a bummer. but there was a, you know, like a 100, there was like a 200 something kilowatt charger, and I was seeing 175 at one point. So I don't know whether it was just, it was the same temperature basically the whole way. So I don't know what it was with that EA charger, but it didn't get anywhere near that peak. And it was actually charged worse than other less powerful chargers, which is weird. But I've noticed that charging this thing in the winter, it does take a little bit longer to charge. In the summer, man, I could probably get real close to making it up to the cottage on a full charge without having to stop. And then if I had a way to charge there too, that would be great. Eventually I will have, level twos at both ends of my frequent trip. But as of right now, I gotta rely on those public chargers. Thankfully they're getting better.
So I'm curious, because a lot of us have been talking about our adventures in charging recently. What do you do when you're charging? Like on the way up north, as we say, is there a restaurant nearby? Like, how's that work? Or do you just sit there and have some phone time? Take a nap.
Let's see. Usually there was something nearby. Whether it was, a lot of these are at gas stations, so I would, take a bathroom break, and I knew I didn't have any like groceries at our cottage, so I, grabbed a couple things that I could, snacks or things like that I knew I'd want to have to eat, or drinks that I knew I'd want to have on hand up there. So I made use of the time. Most of the time there was one charge on the way up, and it was at this Ford dealership in West Branch, Michigan. They had some pretty fast charging. So I stopped there, and there I didn't have anything to do. I was just in this dealership parking lot at night. Didn't really want to wander around and have them see on their cameras some guy lurking in the darkness, peeking at all their cars. So I just hung out. I was actually had an audiobook I was listening to. So I did some of that, and checked up, caught up with my wife on text, and you know, said goodnight to the kids on FaceTime and that sort of thing. But yeah, there are times where you do just have nothing to do, depending on where the charger is.
Yeah, yeah. I think I would, if I were like sort of had your like set route, I would probably be like, well, okay, you know, I can get this far. I can get to this place, top it off. Okay, then I have this, maybe this coffee shop or like the grocery store, like you said. So that sounds all pretty reasonable. Now, you still liking the EV6? I think.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. I mean, despite it taking longer to get up north, it really makes me want to get an EV even more. Like right now, I don't have a daily driver. I just have my 74 Beetle.
That would that take you longer to get up north, probably for a variety of reasons.
Yeah. if it would even make it.
If you made it, yeah.
I think it would make it. I'm gonna try it sometime, but I'm you know, on a good day it's gonna take all day.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really like you know, especially around town. And if I had a level two at home, I don't yet. I'm considering getting an EV this coming year, at which point I would, if, when I buy, great thing about DTE, our providers, is they will help pay for a level two charger installation if you're buying an EV. You can't just get it installed and, you know, have it as a, you know, if you're selling the house, have it as a selling point in your house that DTE gave you for free. You have to actually buy a car, and then you'll be a better customer to them. But I'm considering that, and if I go with something like a Chevy Bolt, that comes with a level one, level two charger. So I would just, I don't know, maybe just get a 240 plug in my garage and get that. But but yeah, just for like the all the driving around town, picking up the kids at two different schools and dropping them off and taking Wally to all his different sports things, and you know, going to Mount Brighton half an hour away skiing, it's perfectly fine for all of that. It, you know, I would have to charge it maybe once a week in the summer, maybe every 5 days, you know, if I didn't have a charger at home, every 5 days or so in the winter. And you know, right now I usually don't drive an EV up north. My wife has the Palisade and that's what we take now, and that's probably what we would still drive up, going up north. I wouldn't have to drive an EV up there unless I was going up by myself. But I totally would. I would totally do it again. It's a nice drive.
Yeah, the EV6, it's ironic. I still haven't driven our long-termer. I've driven the EV6 multiple times, like different press cars, different, like I've driven the thing quite a bit. And it's funny because I still haven't actually driven our specific long-termer. But the car is a bit of a rock star. I mean,
yeah,
I went golfing with it and multiple people were like, what is that? Where can I get that? Oh, it's electric. That's even cooler.
Yeah.
Like it just, people loved how it looks. And then when I told them it was electric, like everybody, that was even better for most people. They're like, oh, wow, that's awesome. Is this a Tesla? What is this? Like, well, no, it's actually a Kia. And they're like, oh, okay. All right.
And
so
it looks cool. It's, and then it's like huge on the inside.
Yeah.
For passengers.
Yep.
And you know, it's still got plenty of, I put a lot of stuff in it. I brought home a lot of stuff from up north.
Yeah. Yeah. Same
that we had left up there. Super practical car. And it's really fun and quick.
Yep.
Which the irony about that is a lot of times when I'm driving an EV, I want to see how efficiently I can drive it. It's sort of a game in my head is to try and get the most range out of it all the time. So I often you know, put it in eco mode and one pedal driving and just try and see how efficiently I can drive it. And you know, that all that performance is wasted on me most of the time. But sometimes I do just put it in sport and just, it's really fun to rip around. It's a little wallowy in the corners, as you might expect. It's got a big heavy battery in it. But at least its center of gravity is low. I would like it to be a little bit lower. Joel and I were talking about it. He was like, yeah, if you could lower the car a little bit and you know, that might make it better and, you know, tune up the suspension, which he just drove the, EV6 GT. I'm excited to learn about what that was like, if that fixed the handling downfalls of it. But even so, like, this thing is, it's rear wheel biased, so it's pretty easy to get the rear wheels to break loose a little bit and the tail to come out a little bit if you push it really hard through the corners. And it's fun. It's a fun car.
No, I agree. I actually wrote something on one of my short-term loans earlier this year. I had the one with the matte gray paint. And I talked about how, like, if it were a little bit lower, you could look at this as kind of like a speed wagon kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of fun to drive. And I didn't unload a cottage or anything, but I did get a lot of gardening, like big, tall plants and things. I think it was actually for the fall I randomly did. We did some fall planting this year. And I got all of that stuff in the back. It was crazy.
I had skis in it and stuff. It was great.
So it's a fun car. I think it seems to be the most popular long-termer we have at the moment. So we are getting a long-term Sienna early in the year at some point. So we'll see. We'll
pack even more stuff into that.
Even more stuff. That'll be an easy, get you up to the cottage, nice and easy. No need to fill up for thing. All right, let's talk some news here. Cadillac Celestiq, demand is through the roof. You know, if you saw our story last week, like, basically, it's very small scale. We're looking at two per day. So it's a hand-built car in a place that's like this special build center at the Warren Tech Center in Michigan. So it's not even really like a factory. It's really like a hand-built, coach-built kind of process, which is cool.
Yeah, like almost like a studio sort of deal.
Yeah, exactly. So no surprise here, but I think it's pretty cool.
This
is how it's
Lenny
going
Kravitz
down.
has a reservation for one.
Yep, that's the idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Our contributor, Stephen Williams, wrote, and this was a great title, this Taylor Swift of automobiles. Yeah. In line for the Cadillac Celestiq.
Yeah,
because it's, you know, like the Taylor Swift tickets, they're going to be expensive and hard to come by.
Yeah.
I'm just really, really hoping that I get a chance to drive one. Just all I want is a chance to drive one once. But you know, it's gonna be so rarefied that we'll see. But yeah, looking forward to that one. I actually, you know, we have an article coming out soon wherein we talk about the cars we're looking forward to driving next year, and that's mine. If it can happen,
that's a great choice. I mean, I would love to drive it too. I think it's powerful. It looks amazing. It's expensive, but I wouldn't even be that intimidated by it. Like, you've driven Bentleys, I know, that are super expensive. I've drove a Rolls Royce earlier this year that was very expensive. So it's like, yeah, like the six figure times three, if you will, $300,000 doesn't scare me for this thing, because I feel like they're going to make it like a tank too.
So. Yeah. I mean, and you know, it's sort of a known quantity too, being Cadillac. It makes it like a little more approachable, because we've been in, we're very familiar with, you know, all their models, really, except for this one now. So I imagine it will, I mean, it's approachable in terms of aesthetics. You just want to, you know, run your hand over it. It's beautiful. And all the lighting, it's really something. But yeah, if you know, I drove the Lyric, and the Lyric was great. And,
Lyric is great, yeah.
And they actually planned the Celestiq before the Lyric, and the Lyric was sort of where they retooled. You know, they have all these, you know, first time made parts in the Lyric, and they're like, this is sort of our test bed for, you know, building the Celestiq, you know, and it's the Lyric was just beautiful inside. It was really well crafted, much better than any other Cadillac I've driven recently, apart from maybe the new Escalade. Just, you know, not swaths of gross plastic and things that creak and bend. It's just really well put together with really really fine attention to detail. And I can only imagine, you know, the little Easter eggs and tidbits that they're going to hide throughout the Celestiq to make it super, super special.
Yeah, I thought the Lyric was outstanding. I struggled to find a favorite vehicle of the year that I drove for another one of our year-end lists, but I just landed on that. You know, the Hummer would have been up there.
The Hummer is mine. Lyric was up there. And EV6 was up there.
Yes, EV6 was outstanding too. But yeah, no, it's definitely the Lyric. Is the interior is one of the like the ritzier, but also like cooler like Cadillac interiors I've been in a while. And I think it's at least the one I drove was very competitive with almost anything I've seen. You know, it's not just even like, well, it's good for a Cadillac. It's like, this is pretty good. Full stop, period. It's a very nice interior. And I think they've done a good job with the exterior design, but the inside they've struggled on. Didn't see that with the Lyric. I thought the Lyric was pretty good.
Yeah. And it's kind of neat that I was on the launch for the Lyric and talking to designers, and they were saying that they're not going to share a lot of this stuff with other GM brands. They're just keeping that IP to themselves, that design IP. So sort of make it feel more unique within the, you know, GM umbrella, which I think is a smart move. You know, sort of harking back to the competitive spirit among the GM brands in the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah, I mean, and that's you know, we've mentioned this a few times, like when GM is sort of right, they're not worried about slicing and dicing. They're just kind of every brand, every product is going after it. If there's some overlap, well, they let the market sort it out. So
yeah,
just like full on, don't take your foot off the gas, pardon the cliche, offense. So
yeah,
we'll see. Let's talk about V8 Mustangs and V6 and other types of Mustangs. The ratings are out. Everything from the turbo four-cylinder up to the 5-liter V8. You know, no real surprises here because we're already pretty familiar with this is the new Mustang lineup, the 2024, I should specify. Dark horse, you know, all the way down to 500 horsepower. And of course,
nice even number.
Yeah, I mean, it's makes sense, you know, dark horse, 500 horsepower. I mean, you know, no real shocker there. We kind of thought they'd get it right into that range. You know, I think this is, it's kind of cool in some ways that they were able to like get this out there early, like in advance of, you know, really like the car being widely available and getting out there. So I think it's, kind of cool. It seems like a lot of
people want to know. I mean, the Mustang has a huge fan base and they're, everyone's dying to know what it's going to be, you know, since they didn't give us everything at the auto show, you know. Give us what they can when they can. Appreciate it.
500 for the 5-liter V8 in the dark horse. Standard one is 5-liter V8, 480 horsepower. And then the 2.3-liter turbocharged four-cylinder, that's 315 and 350 pound-feet of torque. Only thing that changes there is you get 5 extra horsepower. Yeah, no V6. I think I maybe somehow had a brain cramp there. But yeah, that's the lineup.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see what some of the tuners do with it, especially Roush, because Roush if I recall correctly, Roush had a attuned Mustang back in, I don't know, must have been, the early 2010s. That they called the Dark Horse, and it was wild. It was in the press fleet, and it was just, it felt like it was going to kill you. It was nuts. But I'm curious to see what, some of the other tuners do with it. It'll be a new platform, so they'll have to, new, not like car, not a new car platform, but like it's a new canvas to, upon which to work, and it'll be interesting to see what they come up with this.
I drove some of the Mustang Roushes back in the day. I don't think I drove the Dark Horse. I feel like I would remember that. But I drove some of the other, like, just versions and some of the, the tuners, I think, especially, we'll see perhaps, at SEMA next year, all the different things they could do. But, the aftermarket always has fun with Mustangs, as we all do. All right. Lightning is more expensive. Stop me if you've heard this before, but it's up to nearly $58,000 now. Our subhead is that the Pro's price has gone up by over 16 grand this year. So that's rough. I mean, I remember they said this is like a $40,000 truck, and now it's closing in on 60.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's hard to wrap your head around that. I mean, we know that there's, supply chain issues and things like cobalt and lithium pricing and things like that, but that is such a huge chunk of change. When they came out in, when they first launched it and they announced it was 40 grand, my jaw kind of hit the floor. And they say like these are things that they didn't really, expect to happen and, inflation and whatnot, but gosh, they were off by 16 grand that they had to raise the price that like that much in a year. I don't know. I want to give them the benefit of the doubt and just take them at their word that, this is just a result of supply chain and materials and things like that. But, because they were pretty confident with their margins with the car at 40 grand, at least when Zach talked to them. It's just, I wonder how much shock there is on their side or how much dismay on the Ford side that this has apparently had to be the case of them raising the price. I just know it feels pretty disappointing from the consumer side.
Definitely. Yeah. I've driven the Pro. It's a really good truck. I mean, even as sort of like the base, more like work oriented truck, if you will, for like more like, perhaps fleet users, things like that. It's still a very, very good truck. Better than almost and more advanced than even like full line trucks from just a few years ago, top of the line trucks from just a few years ago. It's really impressive, when you look at the execution. Like you, I just kind of give them the benefit of the doubt here, but it's also kind of like, boy, you guys really missed the boat on the initial one. And it's a bad look to keep raising prices. I mean, maybe the worst look is to, report lower earnings, because you're underpricing your cut, so make it a 1 or 2 day bad story, but then, hey, you're making money. So maybe that's the strategy. I think it could also be, maybe they knew they were going to come in aggressive for that first model year, and then they knew they were going to have to raise it, but they probably didn't think it would be like this perhaps. And they probably assumed, hey, the supply chain issues are going to alleviate themselves, and they just haven't. If you look at the Ford website, or almost any car company website, it's like, yeah, you could order this and then we'll get back to you when we can actually get it to you. And it might not have the feature that you think you're getting on it. and, oh, this model is not available. Like, this trim, we can't do that for you. And that's, like, not unique to Ford. That's, like, everybody. So it's just tough because this is, like, you know, their electric F-150, you know. Seems like that's when you really got to kind of dial in on as far as the pricing. Your first at bat, you don't get two or three swings at it.
Well, I don't know.
It is what it is. Yeah. At least they're honoring any orders, existing orders. They're honoring the price that it was ordered at. So there's that.
I mean, it's interesting because if you look at some of the other trucks out there, like the Silverado EV is not out yet. So it's going to be interesting to see like how that pricing structure works. Exactly. When the truck is real. Cybertruck is getting out there. We're going to hear about the Ram Revolution. It's CES in just a couple of weeks now.
Looking forward to that.
That's going to be cool. And even Lordstown Endurance. You know, I drove that truck and it's, I believe it's like a $63,000 truck, ballpark in there. And my first thought was like, whew, they're being aggressive here. I get what they got to do to make money and stay in business. It's not like Ford, where Ford could say, hey, we're going to 41 grand, whatever. We're not going to make money, but we'll make money on these other trucks. Mm-hmm. You know, Ford maybe has come to a different conclusion. Maybe they do need to charge almost 60 grand to keep in business for these things. But Lordstown, they got to charge what their truck is worth. They can't undercut themselves because they simply won't make enough money. But, you know, just kind of looking at this, it's like, well, the market's kind of coming back to them. You know, for a while it was like, good luck with that, guys. This company nobody's ever heard of is going to ask this much for their truck. And, you know, it doesn't do some of these other things. Well, maybe you could get a Lordstown Endurance and maybe it's only a few grand more than some of the competitors. And maybe you like how it looks. So, I don't know. I mean, it seems like in the last few months, the market has moved quite a bit when it comes to electric trucks, and it's fluid to say the least.
It is.
So, spend my money. Let's spend some money here. We've got the, let's see. We grabbed this one from Our Cars on our friends over at Reddit. This is a reliable vehicle for 30 grand or less. The writer has a 2011 Ford Taurus SHO. That was a fun car. I like that one. Talk about
my brother-in-law had that.
Nice.
I don't recall what year it was, but
that was a fun car. Talk about fun memories from the, you know, last decade press fleet. That was a good one right there. So he has the SHO, made some unpleasant noises, smelled terrible, started to lose power and lock up. So this is a problem. The show is done. It's no longer showtime. Looking to switch to a reliable, practical car, my budget is 30 grand or less. Don't want to go over that. Do not want a car. Basically, does not want a car anymore because the work and driveway, home and work, have gravel driveways. It's basically looking to maybe go a little more comfortable and sort of appliance-like, if you will. Capable of fitting 4 to 5, so no two-seat sports cars, anything like that. Does not really want any of the fancy lane assist gizmos or anything. It's kind of an interesting, you know, conundrum here. Considered looking at the Tacoma, but can't find one without over 100 grand for near their price point. Again, would be fine with a 4Runner. Maybe tough to find that for 30 grand or less without just an oodle of miles on it. So just like a $30,000 car, you know? I don't know. A lot of different options here, new and used. Used, you're probably going to get a little more car, if you will. But, you know, I don't know. What do you think? Could bat this around a little bit.
Well, the first thing that popped into my head was a Subaru Forester. You need it to comfortably hold 4 or 5 people. That will do it quite a bit. But it's easy to find them under 30K, and you can find them, you know, some fairly low miles or certified pre-owned for under 30K. You know, Subaru doesn't have the reliability reputation of, you know, Honda or Toyota, but if you can, you know, get something with a little bit of warranty left on it, that might, you know, take care of that problem itself. The other thing I thought of was like a Honda Pilot. Or a CRV. Pretty comfortable. You can get it with, you know, not a lot of frills, and again, you can get pretty low mile vehicles for less than 30,000. And then my final thought was a Hyundai Tucson. I quite like the Tucson. It's definitely going to be comfortable. It's, you know, one of the more affordable cars in that segment, especially for the amount of content you can get. So that's one that I really liked, and that might be the one I would actually go with. You know, that I'm already, you know, a Hyundai owner, and I know what they put in their cars. I know I like that stuff. There's certain content that I want, and they offer it, and they execute it well. But a lot of this is just going to be a personal taste choice.
Yeah, agreed. I think you know, if your $30,000 is like the magical mark for you, Hyundai and Kia both are pretty strong in that $20,000 to $30,000 delta. I tend to think a Santa Fe would be good in there. I like how it looks. I think that could be a good one. CRV, 100%. That's a great one, especially if you just want something reliable that you're not going to have to worry about. Toyota RAV4, that could be, if you like how those look. I've seen some of like the looking around it. KBB has one for a 2021 model RAV4 hybrid. So, you could get into like a hybrid for under 30 grand. That might be kind of cool. That's kind of like three. It feels like the writer here is looking to maybe get into more like crossover territory after like, living the show life here. But I think, that might be like a very like reasonable way, if you will. That way you're a little inch or two off the ground from these gravel driveways that it sounds like are the scourge of your life. So that's one. Or, Honda Civic, Honda Accord, both, you could get those well under 30 grand, especially a couple years used. The Accord to me is a great looking car. So that would be another one to look at. You could always have some fun, see what else is out there, maybe try to get like a Mazda 3 or something. See if you get some stuff on it and that, still comfortable in your budget. Kind of generic. So yeah, cool. Well, this is the last show of the year. For those of you listening at home, scheduling note, we'll be off next week, which is the week between Christmas and New Year's. We will be back the week of January 2nd, January 3rd, sort of when, really the world starts to come back to life. We'll be back with an episode that week. So really, we're only taking a week off, but, be a good probably 10 days or so in between shows, at least for, 2 full weeks probably by the time it drops. Get some questions in. We'd love to reload the queue here. That's podcast@autoblog.com, so get those into us. Holiday beers. What's your holiday dessert, John?
We'll go holiday dessert.
Yeah.
Whew. Well, we made Christmas cookies last night and decorated them with some friends. It was kind of neat. But I'm going to say some friends of ours dropped off this big box of different, baklava.
Oh, those are fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And all the different varieties, like the bird's nest and the lady fingers or whatever they're called. Some have pistachios, some have, different kinds of levels of flakiness. And
nice.
So good. I've been showing a restraint. It's a big box.
And, yeah.
I've been wanting to break into it, but I'm going to wait until, closer to Christmas when we might actually have other people to help us eat them.
Yeah.
But that's my sort of Christmas dessert this year for sure. What about you?
I mean, basically anything with Ready Whip on top. You know, I'm definitely a big fan of that. We always, it seems like around the holidays, we really stock up on like whipped cream, you know, just for the cookies, for the pies. So I'm really into that. When I was a kid, I loved Cool Whip, and that would be on any sort of dessert. We'll see. Cookies, pies. All of the above, man. So at the family gatherings, we tend to do like multiple desserts. So that's, you know, again, anything with Ready Whip or Cool Whip is good with me.
We always used to do Cool Whip on strawberry shortcake.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
It's surprisingly easy to make, but I just haven't made it in a long time.
Yeah, Cool Whip, man. It's a little messier than Ready Whip. Ready Whip has a little bit of a form. Cool Whip just kind of floats, if you will. It's a little slimier, but both are good. Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for 2022. First time I've said that. So good show there, John. Good hanging out with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. And again, 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Again, send us your Spend My Monies. That's podcast@autoblog.com. Be safe out there. We'll see you next year, and we'll let Skyway Traffic take us out. Happy New Year.